All righty. We're set and ready to roll. Welcome to the Media Bids Power Hour. This is Ernest with Power. With me is Jed, the founder and CEO of Media Bids. We've been hosting these calls together for a very, very long time. Jed, this is maybe our 37th or 38th over many, many years. And as our participants have joined us over the years, thank you so much. We have many of you that have never missed a call. We have many of you that are joining for the first time, and we absolutely love that. We have callers from throughout the United States, throughout Canada, and even some international callers as well. Jed, how about some opening words for the group? I'll say a few opening words, and then I'll introduce Ryan as well, okay?
Great. Well, first of all, I want to thank Ernest. Ernest is really the brainchild of these and obviously makes them entertaining and educational. MediaBids is a website. We're an online marketplace for the buying and selling of print advertising for both newspapers and magazines. We are always looking for ways to drive more revenue to newspapers and magazines, and you know, so by extension, this is an interesting topic for us as well. If you are not using MediaBids for your publication, we welcome the opportunity to explain to you a little bit about how it works. It doesn't cost anything, and it's a good way to put your publication in front of advertisers that may not otherwise know that you exist. So thanks again to Ernest and Ryan, and you probably won't hear much from me today.
hey, Jed, hold the horses there, because you have an inquiring mind, and we're certain you will have questions like I will have questions. So it'll positively be fun. But so all of you know, Jed and June and their team behind the scenes are wonderful to work with. They work with many of our clients. They serve them really well. They bring in extra revenue for publications. It's the reason why Jed and myself hooked up years and years ago, and we've been rocking ever since. These calls are always, though, about driving revenue. This is about keeping you out in front and keeping you out front. And every single month, we're inspired to do something that will be of value that you can literally take from this call and use and move going forward. My company is Power Hour. I've been in business for 15 years. I've been around the publishing sector since 1986. I love publishing and publications and working with advertising sales teams. We provide business coaching, business training. We have a recruiting division, an investment banking division that helps our clients buy and sell publications. We do pre-hire testing even before our clients make hiring decisions, and we help our clients with website SEO and website revenue strategies. And today with me is Ryan. Ryan is our VP of Web Strategies. He's been around publications for a decade plus. He has worked with more than 4,000 websites. He knows exactly our world in terms of print and electronic work, and does a phenomenal job with our clients. And we have a host of projects and wonderful success stories all around the world to share with you. Today, Ryan is going to be speaking about growing your publication revenue, near and dear to all of us in these economic times, and your readership, growing your readership through the use of social media. For those of you that have joined us in the past, last year we did a wonderful call on website design that creates smart revenue, and this continues our series. We also did one last year related to search engine optimization and the value and the importance of that. So, Ryan, let's kick it off and meet and greet our group here, and let's dive in, please. Our first point, we're going to talk about what are the three most misunderstood components of social media that impacts the publishing industry. So where to first?
Wonderful. Thanks so much for having me. Obviously, you know that I love to talk about the Internet, and social media obviously is at the forefront of discussions today, especially in the publication world. So one of the let's talk about the three things that are most misunderstood. First of all, social media is not new. One of the biggest things, Ernest, Jed, and the group to understand today is that social media has been around as long as the Internet has been around. And let me explain that further. Social media is so much more than Facebook, MySpace, Twitter. Social media is all about you as a website owner or as a web user engaging with others. And it can be others of a like mind. It can be others with common interests, or it can just be others, if you will. So things like emailing an article to a friend or the ability to forward an article to a friend is a part of the social media packaging. Commenting on articles is all a part of engaging users, allowing users to be able to engage back with your articles. Discussion forums, social bookmarking. So one of the most common misconceptions is that social media is Facebook, or social media is MySpace, or social media is Twitter. And as this call evolves today, we want to let everyone understand a little bit more fully that there is a large complement of things that you may already be doing that actually count as social media, and that you could actually be using better and more effectively to be able to drive revenue for your website. So before I move on to the second misconception, let me pause for a second and see, Ernest, if you had any comments or questions on that.
Sure. And throughout the course of this program, if those who are joining us would like to insert some questions, please send an email to ernest@powerhour.com, or just hit reply to the confirmation that brought you here. And Ryan and Jed, we have 10 pages of inbound questions. So let's continue to move forward. And Ryan, I'll insert those as we roll along here, okay?
Perfect. The second, in my opinion, the second most misunderstood part of social media is that movie Field of Dreams. If you build it, they will come. That is absolutely 100% false. Just by signing up your magazine, your publication, or yourself as an editor, publisher, or salesperson on Facebook or MySpace does not mean that everyone in the world is going to clamor over and start following you on Twitter or going to befriend you on Facebook. If you're not going to actively engage with the social media that you choose, no matter what it is, don't do it. What people often do, and I've seen magazine publishers all across the world do this, is they launch a Facebook page, they actively engage for a couple weeks, they don't get much traction, and so they abandon it. If you're not going to use it, don't even launch it. Or if you launch it, you decide not to use it, then close it down. The one thing that works against you is if you have a Twitter account or a Facebook account or a MySpace account or a LinkedIn account, and you never engage with the people that are there, and you don't use it. It's not enough anymore just to have the logos on your website. You've got to be actively involved if you want to benefit from the traffic and if you want to benefit from the potential revenue.
So Ryan, let me just pause right here, and I'm going to just insert some of these questions.
Okay, great.
You can just give me a very laser response, and then we can pick up throughout the course of the program if there's some follow-through questions, okay? So we have a question in from Dawn in Florida who said, should we have a person monitor social media to make certain any company updates are in line with some kind of standard?
Absolutely. I think that I think that there's two ways to approach it. First of all, I think that you need to select people from your staff that are going to be engaging users. And I like to set it up in a couple of ways. Oftentimes, you're going to have an editorial person, and then perhaps you might have a salesperson. There's a lot of things like Google Alerts that you can use that will allow you to monitor the blog sphere or allow you to monitor the internet, and you can use your company name and your competitor names if there's anything negative floating around. But I do think that it's important for you to set some guidelines within your office. The last thing that you want is an editor or a junior editor spending 3 or 4 hours a day, surfing through the various, MySpaces of the world to find out if there's any negative or positive about your company. Monitoring, though, overall is extremely important for this reason. When a user asks a question of your publication via Facebook, they do expect to get a response. Now, one thing, though, that's a caveat to that or a criticism is a lot of times you'll post something and someone will make a comment back. That doesn't necessarily mean that you have to reply to the comment unless it was a question. Now, if you want to engage the dialogue further and benefit your traffic to your website, and get people posting back and forth, then you will want to engage it. Constant monitoring is actually very important to your success.
All right, very good. Thanks, Ryan. And just a follow-through question. We have a note from Melinda who said, what are the uses for profile pages under my business name as well as fan pages on Facebook? You want to just tie that into this first point here?
Sure. Actually, what I'd like to do, if you don't mind, is why don't we tie that into, to point number two of our conversation.
Okay.
I've got some notes about that.
Beautiful. We'll circle back to that. That's great. Let's continue then with point number one, okay?
Okay. So the third most common misconception is that Facebook, MySpace are the only places that you need to be. Actually, that's actually false. You'll notice if you go out and spend a little bit of time on the internet that there's actually social sites about your particular niche, even if you're a niche of a niche. For example, horses, the equestrian world, is a niche. Well, as a part of that particular world, there's also people that ride quarter horses or quarter racing horses, niches within niches. So, for example, what I would encourage you to do is, if you're going to engage in social media, I would first go out and try to find social sites, discussion boards, etc., that are all about your niche and that you can actively get involved in. Or, if there's not one, you can potentially create one that's better on your own website. Being a part of Facebook is great. Being a part of MySpace is not necessarily something that most business people engage in. But if you can find a niche social media site or a niche social site to be a part of, it's actually going to benefit you in terms of converting those potential users to readers, those potential users to advertisers, etc. So a common misconception is that if you're not on Facebook, you're lost. If you're not on Twitter, you're lost. That's actually not true. I've seen more publishers have more success finding or launching niche social sites than ever before. And we're going to talk about that a little bit more later on as we talk about what's the future of social media.
All right.
So those are the three misconceptions. Social media is so much more than Facebook and MySpace. The second, if you build it, they will come. That's just not true. And third is that if you're not on Facebook or Twitter, you're going to be left behind, and that's false as well.
All right, very good. Let's pause right here. Jed, as you're listening to Ryan sort of talk about some of these misunderstandings, any questions or observations or questions that you might have related to that?
No, I think most of my questions are probably – similar to what people listening might be thinking, and that is just, what are some concrete examples of sort of ways that you can use some of these social media sites to benefit your publication, either from an advertising or a reader perspective.
Sure.
But I think Ryan's getting to that, so
yeah.
I don't want to steal his thunder.
No, there's no.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
No, that's no problem.
Ryan, we do have a question that came in from Jessica in North Dakota, who says, "What are some of the concerns of misinformation about one company spread just as easily as social media?" So this is a little bit on the darker side of social media. You know, when word is out there that says things that's not correct. Any quick laser comment for her before we go forward?
Sure, absolutely. I think that unlike some of the things we're seeing in the news today, I think that you have to be extremely quick to respond with factual and truthful information. The other thing about that, is it's a very good question, by the way, is that I think you need to start out your statement by saying, we're posting this not to start a debate. We're posting this as a matter of fact. And in most cases, if you'd like to contact us further about this, please contact our office directly. The other thing is, oftentimes, you may want to have your lawyer review that in addition before you post it online. But I really think that it's important for you to address negativity in a positive way. And then I also encourage you to direct those people over to you directly for further comments.
Hey, Ryan, one quick question. Do you recommend, even if a publication isn't going to be using Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, that they register their name with those sites just as a placeholder in case they decide to use it in the future?
Yeah, in most cases I would say yes, especially if you're in the national spotlight. It doesn't mean that you have to promote it online, because you can have your account registered and not necessarily use it. Where we get into problems is when people actually register and they put on their website the Facebook or Twitter logo. Someone goes to follow them on Twitter and nothing ever happens, which makes you look bad. Or they go to Facebook, they post a comment, ask a question, become a fan, and they never receive anything from you. It just doesn't make you look like you're with it, you're a part of the times. And the other thing is, if your posts are so infrequent, it really doesn't add a lot of credibility to you, unless what you're posting is super important. Like if you only do one thing a month, but it's crisp and it's perfect and spot on, then that could potentially work to your benefit, rather than these people that post on their business websites about their cats.
All right, very good. So, Ryan, let's move forward to point number two. And again, we'll continue to weave the questions that are both coming in real time and the questions that we received in advance.
Sure.
So the second point here related to publications is, how does social media help you grow publication revenue, right?
Wow.
This is the Ark of the Covenant, the
yeah,
mother lode.
Yeah.
This is it right here, right?
Here you go. Well, how does this work? I'll preface the statement by saying this is just one guy's opinion, but it's a pretty educated opinion based upon things that I've seen and based upon resources and things that I've seen in the publication space. There's a really smart guy. His name is Dan McCarthy. And Dan McCarthy is a gentleman that has taken, and Ernest, you know him, and many of the people on the call know him as well, that has taken social media to, you know, to a new level. One of the things that he does slightly different than what I do is he actually involves some of the things that happen in his personal life in his engagement online. Here's what I'd like to do, and then we'll come back to Dan. I'd like to recommend, I have a Facebook account that I use to correspond with my friends, college friends, my family, etc., and that's my Facebook account. And then I've got a Facebook, you know, for, and then you would have a Facebook for business. And the reason that I like to distinguish between the two is our life is filled with what I like to refer to as noise. Our life is filled with nothing but constant noise. In a business day, I really don't want to be a part of your noise. Now, what I like to see when I'm following somebody on Twitter is concise information. So from a sales perspective, how can you grow revenue? If you are in a particular niche and you're a salesperson or a sales manager or a publisher that has great solid industry information, and you use your Twitter account to be able to share with your potential advertisers concrete, really solid industry information, you become a resource. I think that we all know that people are going to buy from you because they trust you and also because they consider you to be an expert and a valuable resource. I have seen more magazines and newspapers have success by positioning a sales manager or a salesperson as an industry expert on Facebook and Twitter from a business perspective. Very rarely do they mix in, you know, that their kid won the Little League game, even though I think that's great. Very rarely do they, you know, mix in that they're out on a date with their wife. What they do is they stick to business and business information. What it does is it allows people that are following you on Twitter or people that have you signed up for Facebook under Facebook, it allows them to be able to keep up with industry information they either A, wouldn't potentially have access to, or B, they just are looking for more and more information. So one of the first things that I would encourage everyone on the call to do is really think about this. This is not just about engaging readers. I follow on Twitter, and I also am friends on Facebook with a lot of people within the magazine and newspaper industry. You'll find very quickly those that are top of the pops, those that are top of the pile, that really know what's going on. You'll find concise bits of information and nuggets of information. You don't even have to log on to Facebook. If you're a friend of somebody, that information will come to your inbox. It's very, very important for you to think about using a salesperson or a sales manager or even the publisher to become an industry expert. Now, before we take questions on that, one of the things that Dan McCarthy does, though, that I actually think is good, I just don't particularly go this route. Dan actually mixes in, you know, his personal flavor. And there's a lot of people that believe that people follow you and they engage with you because they want to learn more about you on a personal level. I don't necessarily disagree with that approach. What I have found, though, is that I have found that a lot more people have success when they separate their business from their personal accounts. And that's just what I've found just based upon experience.
Mm-hmm. All right, very good. So let's pause here again, and this is Ernest, and you're listening to Ryan, who's our Power Hour VP of Web Strategies, and we're talking about the social media trends and how to leverage it. And there's a question that we had that came in from Eric. Eric's in Canada. Can social media drive readers to a niche market segment when advertisers value the quality of a lead versus the quantity of a lead? You want to comment on that, Ryan?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a great question. It's a great segue. So you've got the sales side of the house, but I think you have to position yourself as an industry expert. And then you've got, you know, well, you've got various, you know, components to your house, but then you've got the editorial side of things. I truly believe that the greatest, and I've seen the greatest success from an editorial perspective using Twitter and Facebook happen when you actually have really solid, great information. I happen to follow quite a few different magazines on Twitter, and what I like to see is I like the fact that the information that's coming from that vertical or from that niche is really not almost in real time. It's almost breaking news. Now, one of the mistakes people make, though, is that they release the information in whole on their Twitter or Facebook account, and they never drag people over to their website. What I would encourage you to do if you want to create and move forward with really good, solid traffic on your website, which will equal revenue as you have are serving more and more ads and more impressions, is if you have an editorial person that has a Twitter account or a Facebook account, and perhaps they're at a trade show or an industry event, the Twitter doesn't need to be. The Apple iPod was just released, and it has 50 new features that are blah, 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 and blah. Instead, the Twitter iPad, the Apple iPad was just released. We have a live blog on our website. Go to and then give the link. What I want to encourage people to do is you want to make sure that your editorial staff understands that the goal is, A, to keep people informed with your social media accounts, but you also want to do something that's very important, and that is bring them back to your website. Now, I hope that answers, you know, that question, and I'll pause for just 1 second before we, you know, move on further. No,
that would be great, and for those of you that have follow-through questions, again, just hit reply to the confirmation that brought you here, and we'd be more than happy to tuck your questions in. I want to circle back to Melinda, who had a question earlier about the use of profile pages under her business name or the use of fan pages on Facebook. You want to tie that in, Ryan, while we're working on point number two here?
Yeah, I think that the biggest thing that we want to always, you know, watch for is we want to make sure that we sort of have a little bit of a separation between church and state. I think that it's always good, you know, on your fan pages and the information that you place online. I think it's always great to have personal flavor and personal flair. I just want to make sure that there's a good, a gentle balance, if you will, on those pages. As you're trying to do your most important thing is to drive people back to the website for the information, you know, that you have. So I think that there needs to be a gentle balance. I'd like to hear a lot less coming out with a lot more quality. Rather than people that update 50, 60 times a day, I'd rather have someone update, say, 10 times with a lot better quality to their, you know, to their content. One of the things that I could note about what Dan McCarthy at NCI, what they do with all of their publications is they invoke flavor, personal flavor into the tweets that they send out and to their blog posts and things like that. But the it's never noise. It's always a gentle balance between personal flavor and actually what is business at hand. The nice thing about that, and I think what she's getting at with the question, is that it's really important that you engage with your readers and with your users on a personal level. You really want them to understand, and you really want them to be able to relate to you. So if you have some personal flavor, you know, in your tweets and on your Facebook page, I think it's really important. Just make sure that the quality, in my opinion, is more important than the quantity.
All right. Jed, as we pause here, any questions or observations on what Ryan is sharing? And then I'm going to tuck in one more additional question here.
No, I mean, I think it's, you know, I think he's right on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Ryan, do you find that most of the people who are successful using these mediums for a business context have also had experience using them personally?
I think not necessarily. I think that after several conferences that I've attended, I've seen people that basically start from scratch and that don't have a lot of experience, and they've gotten involved and they've gotten actively involved. One of the things we talked about earlier is that if you're going to do it, do it. If you're not going to be committed to it, you know, then my concern would be, don't make a half-hearted effort. You know, get in and make it really work, you know, to your benefit. Because what we want to do in terms of, you know, driving revenue is we also want to begin to engage these people on your website and with your advertisers. One of the things that I've seen that's been very, very successful is for you to use your Facebook and Twitter account to let people know if there's industry chats that are going on your website. So, for example, let's just say that you have a webinar that you have sold to a potential advertiser. You're able to use your social media as a promotional tool to be able to bring people in, get them excited about, you know, a potential webinar. Say you've got your advertisers involved in an online discussion forum. I've seen, from a social media perspective, I've seen some amazing success with advertiser-driven forums. And a lot of times people say, oh, there's, you know, has to be a separation between church and state, so to speak. What I've seen is on a lot of magazine websites, in the discussion forums, a lot of times the questions being posed are being answered back by other readers. In a lot of cases, the readers are correct. Sometimes they're wrong. But if you're able to infuse particular certain advertisers that you've chosen into that mix, they can be an expert. They can be an expert on a certain area with this caveat. You say to them, we want you involved, but this is not supposed to be a glorified sales pitch. We want you to give solid, concrete answers. And if an advertiser is smart, they will understand that they can turn this subtle, simple conversation into a potential customer. Because I think that all salespeople realize, and advertisers realize this too, if you beat somebody over the head with a sales pitch, it's, you know, you're going to turn them off more times than you're going to bring them in. So using your social media and using your social aspects of your website, your community, involving advertisers in that community, is a wonderful way, chosen advertisers, is a wonderful way to involve your advertisers with your community. Let them serve as experts. I have 6 or 8 different magazines that Ernest and I have worked with that have done this extremely successfully. Because the advertisers then, as part of their package, so they're a 4-color, 12-time advertiser. They run banners on the website. And because of their commitment, then you invite them to be a part of the advertiser forums. Now, does that mean that other advertisers cannot participate? Maybe, maybe not. That would be a call from your publication perspective. But just imagine if the advertiser is the expert and you could engage 10 or 15 advertisers, get them excited to give solid, concrete answers on your website. You have the ability then to be able to have wonderful content, and your staff doesn't have to be as involved. It has worked time and time again and has been extremely successful, but it's a privilege, and it should only be given to those advertisers that are making a solid commitment to your publication. And I think you should know them as well.
Ryan, this is Ernest, just to dovetail behind that, and you're right, with our Power Hour clients, we're helping them with their publication strategy. So much of this is about, don't waste your time on these 2, 3, 4 things. And by the way, that was rifled, Jed and Ryan, as we saw as prep for this call, just filled with questions related to that. Hey, I'm writing large payroll checks. Where do I allocate my team? Or is my team, you know, really social networking or social not working? You know, I mean, where are we allocating that? And we want all of you to know that there is a real, like playing the piano, they're all keys, and we could get down there, which I don't play the piano, and I could get down there and make a lot of noise. And in the case of publications, we could make a lot of social media noise, and it's just noise. It's not music, and it's not revenue. And that's
right.
Really the key point. Or if we bring an incredible performer who knows how to play the piano, which would not include myself, Ryan, or Jed, they know how to make music. And when you make music, that's how you take social media, and that's how you convert that into revenue for your publication and for your team, and most importantly, against the competitors you're competing with. That's the other piece that we want all of you, as you're listening here today, to recognize, that social media ties into outrunning and outgunning and outperforming your direct competitors. It's a smart use of time if you know which keys to play when. That's music.
Yeah.
It can feel like a time sink and a financial drain if you're just playing the keys or tapping on them like I would be. Ryan, a dovetail to that?
Well, yeah. The other thing, too, overall about social media in general, and the reason that you need to, you know, really take some considerable time and think about this, is that overall you want to increase your overall net worth to your potential customer, to your advertiser, the person writing checks to you. You also want to increase your overall net worth, to your readers. A lot of times what publishers will see is they'll see the Internet as one part of a two-part segment or one, you know, side of, you know, an old record. Like, wow, that does make me seem old. You used to get two songs. You used to get two songs on each side of that album. Well, here's the thing. It's not a website and a magazine. That's so such a flat way, if you will, of thinking about it. If you want to increase your overall net worth to your advertiser, you need to increase your web, if you will. For example, if you had a shotgun shell and it only had 2 BBs in it, it's highly unlikely when you go out hunting that you're going to have much success. Instead, you want to have a lot of ammunition together. To give you another example, you want to have more arrows, if you will, in your quiver. What I'm seeing right now in our the space that we all live within, it's not always the best magazine that always gets the ad buy. In many cases, it's the ad rep that comes into that call that's the most creative and presents the best possible opportunities for return on investment. So what that means is you've got to be able to show to your advertiser that you're casting a much bigger net for them. So you're able to say, listen, I've got my print publication. It's wonderful. It's great. I've got the website, and here's the various components of it. We've got X number of, you know, followers on Twitter. And when we do this webinar, we're going to be able to draw them back in. We're able to use our Facebook account for that special promotion that we're doing together to draw people in. We're able to also involve you in our advertiser or vendor forums to be an expert there. There's so many components. You have to cast, in this day and age, you've got to show a much better propensity for return on investment. Here's the cool thing about it, everybody. This is the really neat part of this whole process. Most of the things beyond the printed word that we're talking about are not terribly expensive to execute. They do require some time, but they're not terribly expensive to execute, so the margins on them, you know, are much better. When you're able to go into an advertiser with a package that has 9 or 10 components to it, you're probably, it's highly likely, you're going to beat the guy that walks in and just says, hey, do you want to buy an ad? And, oh, by the way, I'll throw in some banner ads. Overall, I truly believe the way to use social media to make money is to include that social media as an aspect of your overall package that you're presenting as a salesperson.
All right, very good. Let me pause, and I'm going to insert a question here. We have two questions, Ryan and Jed, that are kind of related. We have one from Doug in Kentucky, who said, how can smaller titles take advantage of the Internet and social media to compete with larger magazines and companies?
Mm-hmm.
And then in tandem, Mark in Wyoming asks, what are the effective ways to differentiate a small-town newspaper from the rest of the pack? Sort of the same question.
Sure.
One is newspaper. The other is, I'm small. I'm, you know, it's a classic David and Goliath. Can I use
sure.
social media that in a way that will benefit? You want to field
sure.
those?
Yeah, I mean, the wonderful thing about the Internet is it really is the great equalizer. It does have the opportunity to, if done correctly, you can present yourself in such a way that if I work, you know, out of a garage, I can present myself to be equally as good or as big as someone that, you know, has an office of 3,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, really a wonderful thing. The way to take advantage of it, in my opinion, as a smaller publisher, is you have the ability to be a lot more agile. You have the ability to move faster. You know, you are that, you know, college quarterback that's able to weave back and forth, you know, very, very quickly and complete the pass. I think the one thing that you have to your advantage as a smaller publisher is your ability to be able to experiment in very, very broad, big ways that larger companies in many cases can't. Now, if you are a larger company, the one nice thing about the Internet is that you actually can experiment and then you can pull it back, pretty quickly. Now, the biggest advantage, in my opinion, as a smaller publisher, even though that, you know, you might have a smaller staff, is you have the ability to use different applications online, for example, like TweetDeck or HelloText, to be able to update your status from one place and actually then have it update across the various platforms. So that allows you to be one person, and yet you're updating 5 or 6 social media accounts. So say, for example, you have an account in MySpace, Facebook, you're commenting on LinkedIn, and you've got a Twitter account. You can go to one place, whether it's on your iPhone or on your computer. You're able to update your status or give information. It updates all 6 places. That's, you know, one suggestion that I could make to you. The other is setting aside a particular time each day. Set a reminder in your Outlook to be able to go and share information. It reminds you to do it. Here's the one thing that happens with smaller publishers is that they just get very busy. Every day you're busy, right? Well, the thing about it is you might have to set yourself a reminder, hey, go make a post or make a tweet. The other thing that you can do as a smaller publisher is you have the ability to be able to really weave some awesome promotions and editorial feedback into your Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, you know, type accounts. We all know that we're extremely guilty of making assumptions. Our whole life as an editor, as a publisher, is about assumptions. We have to make an assumption of what the reader actually wants to read or hear about. Well, you can use your social media to be able to query and query and be able to survey the readers to find out, are you meeting their needs, and what else would they like to see? The cool thing about being a smaller publisher is you can respond almost immediately by launching it online. There's really not a lot of approvals, or you're able to, you know, place it in your magazine pretty quickly. As a smaller publisher, you also then can say, we really want your comments, you know, on this particular story. Please go to da-da-da-da-da. Or, even better is, this article continues online, and here's the link, and then be able to go on there and start, you know, those comments. One of the things that I see that is not done enough, because people are afraid that someone's going to post a dirty picture or they're going to post some foul language, is commenting on stories. One of the coolest things that can happen on the Internet, and Brian Williams at NBC News is one of the better people that blogs online, is people, they want to make comments, but you have to encourage them to make it. And then when they make a comment, you really need to make a change, either respond to it or make the change. I personally place some comments on the an NBC Nightly News blog that Brian Williams does. And personally, this is honest experience, the comment that I made, I actually saw them reply back, that's a great idea, we're going to take that to one of our next meetings. I saw that change actually occur on national news. Me, little Ryan here, that posted up on Brian Williams, NBC's website. Now, I saw that happen. What does that mean to me as a viewer, as a user, as a reader? It means that you're listening. And that if I have a valid idea, that you may steal it and make millions of dollars. No, I'm just kidding. That you may actually execute it. So when you're building this relationship with your readers, it's extremely important that it's not one-sided. If you really don't want their opinion, then don't just put up this act that you're asking for and say their opinion matters. If you're going to ask for their opinion, be prepared to respond to it. And don't not engage in social media practices for fear that someone's going to place foul language or a picture online. I will tell you, and I keep a piece of wood here in my office to knock on. I will tell you, knock on wood, I have very rarely seen social media or comments or blogs work against a publication. In almost all cases, it has it has a benefit.
All right, let's
well,
pause
you know, one
here.
Thing, one,
go ahead, Jed.
Just quickly to add, to add to Ryan. And Ryan, you can speak to this better than I can, but. It seems to me too that the thing that makes the printed publication unique, which is you know in many ways unique content, is also what should make the social media unique, right?
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
So the initial question being, you know, how can you compete? Well, you know, maybe you can't compete for a million audience, but you can compete in the sense that you're talking about a specific subset of content which is unique to your publication.
Exactly.
All right. So let's pause right here. A couple quick things. Doug and Mark, we hope that feedback was helpful to your questions. You're certainly welcome to send us a follow-up note, and we'll respond to that or look to weave it into our call. And remember, at the top of the hour, we're going to open up the lines a bit more informally and field some of the questions on the fly here. Belinda, saw your reply that just came in. that you have a more detailed question related to Facebook and profile pages. We'll handle that offline as a follow-through email. So thank you so much. The subject line was titled, "You missed my question by a country mile." So Melinda, your voice is heard. We hear you, but it's too meaty for us to take it at a granular level. We'll handle it electronically. Ryan, let's shift into our third point here, and then I've got three or four questions behind the scenes that are very appropriate. But the third point that we promised to cover today related to growing revenue and readership and social media is, what is the future of social media and your publication website?
Sure.
Let's talk about point number three here.
Sure. Well, a recent survey showed us and told us that 57% of workers use social media tools for business. We're seeing a real surge because people are looking for work, that they're using LinkedIn to connect with other older colleagues and things like that. I think that as we begin to see social media evolve, I think we're going to see either niches within Facebook become more popular, or we're going to see people that are actually, there's a real insurgence of people starting niche social media sites. Some of the most popular, revolve around magazines, actually. As you look at bigger magazines like Runner's World and places like that, they actually have social media sites that are a significant driving force behind their magazine website. Because they're able to use this powerful tool that we like to refer to as a good old-fashioned magazine to be able to promote, their website. So the wonderful thing that I think we're going to see as time rolls forward is I think we're going to see a lot more specialization of social media. I also think that now more than ever before, you're going to be able to use social media to deliver behavior-specific advertising, for your advertising customer. Which you hopefully will not only be able to charge money for, but that you'll also be able to direct that advertising better to a particular reader or a particular person in a particular part of the country. We see that on Facebook. If you're a Facebook user, I happen to enjoy horses, and so I've had, as I'm surfing around Facebook, I'll see advertising driven to horses and special interests. So I think as time rolls forward, we're going to see a lot more people using the tools of the social media sites to benefit their lives, whether they're searching for recipes, for dinner tonight, whether they're trying to connect with someone of a like-minded interest. And the more that you can do as a publisher to be able to use your magazine to be able to drive people to specialty sites, that especially niche social media sites that you can create, you know, the better. The biggest thing, though, that I think magazine publishers can do here in the next, you know, 6 to 12 months is utilize the networks that you currently have, the readers you have, for publicity and for promotion. And there's that one magic ingredient that I always like to share with people they often forget, and that is that the Twitter, the tweet that you send out or the status update that you place on Facebook should not be the sum total. It really needs to be a teaser, if you will, to bring people back. The other thing, though, is I really believe that, and I used this when the iPad was released yesterday, is that I was using social media to keep up with things that were out of my reach. And I think that a lot of times readers look to your magazines and to your newspapers for you to be the leader and the expert, for you to lead them down a particular path. And also, I think now they're relying on you more than ever to be actively involved with social media. It would have seemed odd to me if CNET or, you know, Wired Magazine or one of these would not have had somebody live feeding or live tweeting from the Steve Jobs debut of the iPad. That would have seemed very peculiar to me. So I think that your readers are going to become more and more, you know, in tune with this, and they're going to expect you, for example, if you happen to be, you know, in if you were published a magazine about a particular industry and you were not at that trade show actively tweeting, actively engaging with video, photos, etc., I think what they're going to do is they're going to go to a source that will. This is going back to the one question I think is really important. What can you do as a small publisher to play and play games with the, and be in the same ballpark, if you will, as the big dogs? You're a lot more flexible to be able to go to trade shows and expos and things like that and be able to keep up and, you know, maintain tweets and maintain photo blogs and video blogs, etc., than a lot of these bigger publishers, because they either just are not as flexible as you or they've got to go through a lot of approvals. And don't be discouraged if they send six people and you just have one, because your readers are going to be loyal. If you don't engage, though, with this social media in a deep and effective way, not only are you going to be potentially letting your readers down, you're going to be potentially, you know, just letting your entire business as a whole down, because there's just too many tools out there today for you to use. And if you see they have thousands and thousands of iPhone apps available now, even applications for the BlackBerry and for the new Droid phone, you need to actively be involved in staying up with technology. You don't want your readers to leave you behind and go to a resource that actually will engage them in a social media type way.
So let's pause right here, because Linda, one of our Power Hour publication clients, sent us an interesting note here that says, do you think that when the economy gets stronger, Ernest and Ryan, businesses will return to paid advertising through traditional methods, or is social media here to stay? How perfect is that question from Linda?
Yeah, no, I think it's a great question. I mean, I think that, you know, now more than ever, people are looking for more and more resources. They just, you know, we know now that 89-some percent of Americans have daily high-speed internet access. And so I think that, you know, people are looking, but what the big thing is, they're looking for quality information. I don't know that the paid advertising, you know, part of it, and I hope that she doesn't mean, you know, people putting things behind paid content firewall blocks. I don't think that's what she means, but I think social media is here to stay. I think it's going to get bigger and better because people love to be engaged with others. As bad as it is, people love to waller in other, as they say here in the South, people love to waller in other people's misery. And people also likewise like to celebrate with other people's successes. They'll latch on to you if you have something of quality to deliver. Your ability to weave advertisers into the overall social media mix of your website is going to be mission critical. And we talked today a little bit about ways to be able to engage. I would tell you this, though. People's email addresses and their cell phone numbers are extremely valuable data. I would treat them as if they were gold. If you use them to your advantage and you do it right, you can make a lot of money off one email address. If you do it wrong and you rent that email address via social media or whatever it is, the backlash can be pretty bad.
Let's insert, because there's two questions that just came in that are sort of related. We have Scott in Georgia who said or asks, you know, will social media increase my website traffic? And then we have a related question from Cindy in Pennsylvania, who said, how does small Twitter post help my search engine optimization? Now, Ryan, of course, we do a lot of work with our clients around the world related to their SEO, search engine optimization, helping bring more traffic. But can you address it? How the social media part engages the SEO and how that all ties together?
Sure. Well, social media, as we talked before, is not just Facebook and MySpace. Social media is also involves social bookmarking. The social bookmarking sites like Dig, Delicious, Newsvine, Furl, Fark, all of those websites are wonderful ways for you to be able to share your information and those types of things. In a lot of cases, in most cases, are open to the Google bot. What you're going to find on Facebook is that there's only the information that you allow to be made public to those bots is going to benefit you. So in your features and settings and preferences on Facebook, you have to determine what part of the information you're sharing on Facebook, the articles that you're posting, etc., are available to those, you know, to those bots that will increase your citations and your links back, to your website. One of the things, though, related to Scott's question, I think it's important for you to bring people back to your website, but also don't forget that you can engage people on the social media sites as well. You can also involve your advertisers as well. I think that we're all familiar with, you know, what happened with State Farm potentially selling space on their Facebook page. I don't recall it right now exactly what the outcome of that was, but there's any number of ways for you to be able to post articles from your advertisers, information from your advertisers, on your social site, like Facebook, et cetera. If you do that in a tasteful and effective way, meaning that you're sharing valuable information, I think that it can be extremely effective and increase your overall net worth, not only to your reader, but also to your advertiser as well. The other thing I said, though, and I can't help but repeat this one more time because it's such a common problem, is that you want people to come back to your website. So you want to be able to make your status update, if you will, a great article on, a lobster clam dip or a new recipe on lobster clam dip. Here's the link, and it links back to your website. In that same vein, you could share that recipe on the social site, but more than likely, you're going to get more revenue benefit by driving them back to your main website.
Perfect. And I'm just chuckling for a moment. Wayne in Illinois pings me a LinkedIn in the middle of our call. Wayne, fabulous. Go look at your inbox. I've connected us. The very evidence of social media happening real time. A la one-to-one, Ryan and Jed. Wayne, bravo. Very nice to be linked in and connected, and I just pinged you back a note related to that. Ryan, I've got one additional question, and I'm going to pause, Jed, to see if you have an additional question before we wrap up, and then we'll talk about how to open our lineup informally. But there's a question on the table from Joy in Oklahoma, who says, we offer social media exposure to our advertisers. What is the best way for us to maximize lead generation for them? Taking it even again a little step further.
Sure. The one thing that I always like to do is make sure that you have that lead generation mechanism in some place that you can track it. Because a lot of times what happens with advertisers, as we all know, the end of the month comes and you really don't have any way to prove to them that their ad works. So you call, you say, hey, you know, it's time to renew your ad. Did your ad work? No, it didn't. And I think, Ernest, you and I have seen this many times. You want to make sure that you engage them in such a way that you have a tracking number of some kind in place, that you have a website URL with a special, unique URL in place. You want to be able to have on the social site a pathway to push them over to a microsite on your website. But I think the key overlying factor is to be subtle. Now, it doesn't mean you can't have a clear call to action, but you want to make sure when you're engaging people, you know, whether it's on Facebook, whether, you know, wherever it is, you know, that your call to action is clear, but it doesn't mean that you have to be, you know, overly salesy in how that you do it, and that's going to increase, you know, your click-throughs, and it's going to also increase your reputation with the people that are there. If you're constantly selling, people are going to flee. I mean, they just really, you know, are going to, you know, to flee. So I think you have to have very, very clear you know, calls to actions. But also, the key answer to that question is repetition. I think that you have to present, as we know, people need to see a billboard or television ad 7 times before they respond. Typically, though, you want to engage them in such a way that you make the path of least resistance possible. You want to make sure that if you want to increase, you know, the lead generation, you want to make sure the path to capture that lead is the simplest and easiest possible. I oftentimes have clicked on links from Facebook to things I thought were interesting, and then I got there and they wanted 20 pieces of information. So I would encourage you to make the path of least resistance that you can. Ask two or three bits of data that will move them on to the next point of sale, or two or three pieces of information that are easy for someone to give, and you're going to increase, you know, the number of leads that you're able to bring in.
All right, very good. Just before we pause here, Jed, any additional questions you have for Ryan? Clearly, we've covered a truckload of information, which we knew every time Ryan comes and joins us, and clearly there's so much work that you can hear that he's doing for and with all of our Power Hour publishing clients. But anything that that strikes you about what he shared, or that you found, amazingly insightful?
No, I think it's all pretty interesting. I guess the one question that I imagine some people on the call would have would be that, you know, is there, most of the examples you gave were sort of national in scope. Do you find that these types of tools are just as relevant for local publications or publications with a specific geographic footprint?
Sure. Well, let me be exceedingly clear. And give you some real focus on this. You will have more success doing this in a local or small regional marketplace because your information is so much more tailored and so much more specific. So if you happen to be, for example, a publisher of a regional magazine that covers a particular area, you truly probably are the leading expert in that area. And so if you're able to use a Twitter account to keep people updated about festivals coming to the area, to keep people updated about particular happenings within that area, people will come to rely upon that. They won't have to constantly be wondering, oh, I wonder what happened with that particular trial that happened in such and such county, because you're going to constantly be engaging them via your various social media aspects. The one thing, though, is you have to develop in a local community a certain amount of trust. And that's why I mentioned earlier you want to try to keep the noise, if you will, to a minimum. I'd like to say, though, just one final time, I do think it's important for you to interject your personal, not personal like meaning your political views necessarily, depending on your magazine, but sort of a personal flavor, maybe a sense of humor, because these social media things, if you will, are really a way for an editor to show that they have a great personality. They're a way for you to personalize the user experience overall. So if you're able to use your accounts to keep people up to date on information, if you're in a particular topic, sports scores, events, things like that are going on, you really can become an extremely valuable, local resource. And it really doesn't take that much time. If everybody remember that one thing I said, you want to engage people where they are. Don't expect them to come to you. So if you set up accounts, for example, on Facebook and MySpace, and you've got a LinkedIn account, you can use those things like TweetDeck or HelloText to be able to update all of those sites. And then maybe you just go through, while you're drinking your coffee once a day to make sure, see if there's comments. But keep in mind, if you use the social media sites to your benefit and use all their features and all their tools, that's actually going to alert you if someone has posted a comment. Now, one of the newest advances on Facebook, just happened here in the last couple of weeks, is that you don't have to log on to your Facebook account. If someone posts a comment, you can actually click reply on your email, make a reply and click go or click send, and it's going to update the comment, so that will save you a little bit of time as well. So it really doesn't take that much time. And again, just focus on quality. The things you're sending out, are going to give you a lot bigger benefit if you have quality responses.
Perfect. Let's pause here. Ryan, thank you so much. This was incredibly helpful. To talk about social media and how publications can drive readers and revenue from that. For those of you who joined us last year, we worked on website revenue and search engine optimization. We also worked on the topic related to designing the navigation and the look and feel of your website. Upcoming this year, Ryan will come back and revisit conversations about digital magazines, monetizing your website, and the actual act of web site sales and how that all combines into the print publications. It's absolutely a combination. We also did last year, at the very end of the year, a wonderful call. Jed led us on pay-for-performance ad sales. That's specifically the work that MediaBid does. And you're always welcome to gain and glean more information from Jed and his team and our confirmation and in our follow-up note. Their website is there, mediabids.com. And we also did a call in November with a conversation about my ad is not working, and wow, did we have an avalanche of response. So every month we have a wide variety of topics that we cover that help publications and publishers around the world succeed. We want you to make more money, have more fun, and compete even stronger in your marketplace. So we're delighted that all of you joined us here today. Jed, would you like to say some closing words? Then we'll pause the formal portion of our call, and then I'll explain to the group how we're going to open it up and field some informal questions maybe for the next 5 or 10 or maybe even 15 minutes, okay?
Yeah, I just want to thank Ryan and Ernest for putting this together and teaching us all a little bit more about social media.
Mm-hmm. Perfect, Jed. Thank you so much for all you do behind the scenes, you and your team, and thanks for the direct work you do with our clients and your clients of MediaBids. It's really wonderful to be here together. I'm going to pause the call. Give me just one sec.